Tuesday morning to you, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon Podcast. Since it is Tuesday, this is an archive show, first published as a newspaper column and podcast episode several years ago. Thanks for downloading, and I sure hope you enjoy it. Halloween in Oregon, like everywhere else in the U.S., is a pretty big deal. The streets are thick with trick-or-treaters all over the state, and although the hot costumes this year include zombies and pirates and Batman, there will probably be one or two kids out there dressed as skeletons. Well, skeletons may be out of fashion this year, but they're arguably the most interesting Halloween artifact you could name. Skeletons are real. They're dead, but they were once alive. They can't talk, but once they could, and their cold and lifeless condition suggests that something dramatic, perhaps even tragic, happened to them. If only they could talk. Oregon has a few skeleton-related mysteries, mysteries that we could clear right up if only those bones could tell us their stories. One of them dates back to 1911, and it involves the skeletons of horses, not humans. The skeletons of the humans, in this case, were never found. It seems that one sunny day, 101 years ago, a prospector was looking down into a valley in the Ochoco Forest and saw a log with a very strange profile. Six identical notches in it, looking like they were cut that way on purpose. The prospector hiked down into the forest to investigate, thinking perhaps that he'd stumbled across an old homestead or a mining claim. But when he got there, he found the skeletons of six horses, complete with the metal parts of long rotted away bridles and saddles. Clearly they had been tied to a log and left there to die of thirst. The desperate animals' attempts to gnaw through the log had cut the notches, which the prospector had seen from above. Well, six saddle horses would have meant six riders. Six riders who clearly tied their horses here in the middle of nowhere, meaning to come back for them in a matter of hours or maybe even a matter of minutes. Six men who'd gone somewhere on foot, and not a single one of them had made it back. Six men whose presumed disappearance hadn't made a big enough impression for anyone in the area to remember who they might be. What on earth could have happened? To this day, no one has figured that out. Legendary Central Oregon raconteur Rube Long tells a story of another mysterious skeleton. It seems sometime in the early 1920s, when he was a young man, Rube was hauling freight with his hired hand, a 6'4" Silver Lake lad named Shorty Hawkins. The two of them had stopped at an abandoned homesteader's cabin by Peters Creek Sink in one of the most remote parts of the high desert of southeast Oregon. Near the cabin, the two of them found a human skeleton, mostly buried in a sandbank and blasted by the cold and relentless high desert wind. Was this the original builder of the cabin, a dryland homesteader trying to eke out a living on 320 acres of windswept desert? Had he perhaps broken an ankle, stepping in a hole, and died out there hundreds of miles from the nearest settlement, or had he been caught in a blinding snowstorm, unable to find his cabin and frozen to death a few hundred yards from warmth and safety? What had happened to this stranger? Rube and Shorty gathered up his bones and took them inside the cabin, out of the wind. There they assembled them on the floor as best they could. There were quite a few bones missing, but the important ones, skull, pelvis, most of the ribs, were all there. The skeleton, of course, had a name, but Rube and Shorty didn't know what it was, so they dubbed him Sandy. This done, the two went outside to take care of their horses. They were doing that when a cowboy rode up. Quote, "We forgot all about the skeleton and told him to go in, get warm, and get himself something to eat," Rube wrote later in his book. "When we came back in, no one was there. Shorty said, 'That's funny. Sandy likes most people.'" The Oddfellow's bones. In August of 2010, a 16-year-old girl named Jenny Minton was helping clean out a closet at the International Order of Oddfellows Hall in Scio when she made a startling and creepy discovery. It was a small black casket full of human bones. The bones turned out to be part of the ceremonial accoutrements of the Scio Oddfellows. this particular chapter was chartered in 1856, and the induction rituals for the Odd Fellows include a memento mori, usually in the form of a skeleton. Today, active Odd Fellows chapters don't typically use real skeletons for this, but at one time they did. If you think about it, it's hard to imagine what you'd make a skeleton out of if you didn't have access to plastic. And this particular skeleton was bought out of a catalog, an Odd Fellows regalia and paraphernalia catalog, sometime in the late 1800s, when, of course, there was no plastic. This according to the recollections of Cy Odd Fellows and Rebecca's members. The top of the skeleton's skull had been neatly sawn in half, suggesting that the skeleton was a retired medical school subject, so to speak. This raises a number of fascinating questions. In the late 1800s, most people weren't open to the idea of donating their bodies to science, and it was quite difficult for medical schools to slake their thirst for fresh cadavers to dissect, if you'll pardon my use of a perhaps overly colorful metaphor. So an entire underground industry developed on the East Coast, an industry devoted to stealing corpses and selling them to medical schools. Body snatchers, or resurrectionists as they called themselves, would prowl graveyards looking for fresh diggings and bribe undertakers to slip them corpses. They'd even go into poorhouses and impersonate relatives so they could claim bodies. In Britain, some body snatchers actually started murdering people so that their bodies could be sold. In the U.S., so far as is known, nobody ever went quite that far. All of which is to say that it is somewhat unlikely that the fellow whose bones the Odd Fellows bought had any idea that this would be his fate. The bones were donated to the Oregon State University Anthropology Department, where they were cleaned and analyzed and served as the subject of OSU student Dawn Marie Alapisco's Honors College thesis. Alapisco reports that the bones belonged to a powerful, strong man, nearly 6 feet tall, and ripped. The skeleton had developed in a way that telegraphed, quote, muscular hypertrophy. His neck, back, and knees were worn and bent in ways that suggested he'd carried many heavy loads. And he died of tuberculosis, which had eaten into his bones. By the time he died, his right arm would have been useless. He was 45 to 55 years old and died sometime between 1860 and 1890, but probably closer to 1890 since that's when his bones were sold. That means he would have been at or near fighting age during the American Civil War. Did he fight in it? What did he do for a living, this job that made his muscles so big and wore him out so soon? Could he have been a deep water sailor? His skull bears an odd resemblance to Popeye the Sailor Man, not that that's any kind of evidence. Or was he perhaps a Misery Whip era logger, or a longshoreman, or something else? Did he have a family, maybe a son or daughter, to bury him and cry and put flowers by his tombstone, never dreaming that someone had slipped by one night and stolen his corpse out of the ground? Or was he one of those unclaimed dead in the poorhouse, left destitute after a life of working too hard for not enough, with no family, dying painfully of consumption, alone? Just one thing is sure, we will never know. This story was first published on October 14th of 2012, just in time for Halloween, you'll notice, under the headline, If Only These Bones Could Talk, Mysterious Skeletons of Oregon. Key sources included works by David Braley, McKinley Smith, Rube Long, and Dawn Alapisco. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. More info is at our hub page at offbeatoregon.com. Offbeat Oregon is a division of Pulplit Productions, a boutique publishing house about which more can be learned at pulp-lit.com. Speaking of which, if you enjoy listening to me, you might check out some of my audiobooks. You can find them most easily with a search for my name on audible.com. Most of them are old pulp stuff, H.P. Lovecraft, Edgar Rice Burroughs, etc., but at least two of them are Offbeat Oregon history type stuff. Check them out if you're so inclined. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Questions, critiques, ideas for a future episode? Email me at fj@offbeatoregon.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.